to see it. So we're going to start with the subject of Mamzerus, not a very cheerful subject, but we had been talking about Gittin when we last left off last year. And we discussed the importance of making sure you have a kosher get, because if a woman doesn't have a get, and then she remarries, then a child who's born from the second marriage will be a mamzer in most cases, many cases. And a mamzer, where we know, is not allowed to marry freely within the Jewish community. Lo yavo mamzer b'kal Hashem gam dor asu lo yavo lo b'kal Hashem, pasuk in Devarim. That if somebody is a mamzer, a bastard, I think is the English translation, then they're restricted from marrying within the regular community of Israel. And there's a question as to what exactly is the solution for somebody who is in this category, somebody who's a mamzer. It's a terrible thing. In fact, the Medrash Koheles refers to this as included within Vinei Masa Shukim Bein Lahem Menachem Miyadosh Kiem Koch Bein Lahem Menachem Paskin Koheles, that the people who live life oppressed and they have nobody to comfort them. And this is considered a reference by some, according to the Medrash, to somebody who's a mamzer. The Vlad Zeh Machota, this Vlad didn't do anything wrong. The Vlad was purely innocent of any wrongdoing. It was the mother who remarried without a get, or some other terrible, dastardly sin that was committed that led this child to be a mamzer. So the Gemara says that even though there's no solution in this world, in Olam Haba, the mamzer is going to be greeted very warmly and is going to be treated with great respect, will be considered the kulam the habnaki. In the world to come, the mamzerim will be clear and sparkling, beautiful gold. However, in this world, the mamzerim unfortunately suffer. They're sort of the apocryphal story. I probably shouldn't tell all the, but it's the yahrzeit of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, whose Hebrew name, interestingly, was not Jonathan, it was Yonasan, it was Yaakov Tzvi. So we commemorate the yahrzeit of this great figure, Rabbi Yaakov Sacks. I had Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Sacks, this is the chief lord, Rabbi Sacks. I had the privilege of writing an essay in his honor in the Hebrew volume that was published in his honor around maybe 8 years ago, something like that. And I had the privilege of even introducing him on one occasion when he spoke at Yeshiva University. He was a very brilliant man and a very intellectually gifted man, but he also liked to inject humor into his presentation. So in his honor, I'll tell a bad joke. And that is that there's an apocryphal story that there were, three different entities that had a complaint in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu of how they're treated in this world. One was Aleinu, the prayer of Aleinu. It always gets recited when people are taking off their tefillin, they're running away from shul. The other was Ashir Yatzer, what? I get recited when people go to the bathroom. And the third was the Mamzer, who's just in this world, can't get out of being in the state of Mamzerus, and is so restricted from whom he can marry, or Mamzerus, whom she can marry, even though they didn't do anything wrong. So he said, it's not fair. So Kodesh Baruch Hu said, okay, don't worry, I'll take care of you. So to Aleinu, he said, I'm going to make you into one of the most important portions of the holiest davening of the year, Musaf on Yom HaKippurim. You're going to be a major centerpiece of the davening. Asher Yasser, he said, I'm going to give you, you're going to have a bracha under the chuppah. Every time people get married, the Sheva bracha, so they're going to say, Asher Yasser, don't worry, I'm going to give you your place. And the person who was telling the story, I'm going to give you the background, was a Rosh Yeshiva of a recorded, so I can't say what she was. Rosh Yeshiva of a particular yeshiva here in Chicago, supposedly, and was sort of on the outs with the board at the time that he was leaving and giving the speech. And he said that a Kodesh Baruch Hu said to the mamzer, don't worry, I'm going to make you chairman of the board of this yeshiva. Leave it at that. So Mamzer is a very vexing issue. And yet, you know, the Chazal, they tried very hard to find a takana for Mamzer. The Gemara in Chagiga says, Muvas lo yuchal l'skon, v'chesron lo yuchal l'himanos, that something that's crooked, you can't make it straight. This is somebody who becomes a mamzer. Not so easy to fix. Just because it's not so easy to fix doesn't mean that we don't try anyway. So we're just going to discuss today. We only have a short period of time. I don't want to spend too much time on mamzerus because it could be complicated and convoluted. And as I said, it is somewhat depressing, but I want to give a little bit of a context as to how the poskim nowadays delve into these issues. So first you have the Gemara and Yevamos Daf Mem Tesla and Aleph, source Dalet here, which is Ezu Mamzes. The Mishnah says Ezu Mamzes, the three-way machlokis, based on the juxtaposition of the pasuk regarding mamzerus with the pasuk of lo yikach ish eshes aviv, a person can't take their father's wife, lo yikalek kanaf aviv, what type of issur is being referred to over here? What's the violation? Are we talking about that a mamzer only comes from the worst type of violations, any violation? So Rabbi Akiva says that a mamzer comes from any kind of relationship which had a negative prohibition attached to it, would automatically lead to mamzerus. That's the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. The opinion of Rabbi Yeshua is that it has to be a relationship for which the people would be put to death. But we paskin like the opinion of Shimon HaTimani, sort of a middle opinion, that it says that any kind of relationship where the prohibition would result in the penalty of kares, even if the people wouldn't be put to death, that would lead to any child who was born from that relationship to be a mamzer. Assuming that this was a relationship where there would be no tfisas kiddushin, like a person who marries their mother, they're not considered to be married halakhically. A person marries a woman who's a nida, they're considered to be married, even though it would be an issur kares for a person to have relations with an either, so a child of that relationship would not be considered to be a mamzer. But if there was any relationship where it would be an issur kares, otherwise, then the child would be a mamzer. And just like with respect to, let's say, your father's wife, you can't marry her, but your father can marry her. The other people who are permitted to marry this woman, Even if she would become a widow, she could, you know, marry somebody else. She couldn't marry her own son. So if there is somebody who cannot really be married to anybody, or nobody would be allowed to effectuate kiddushin with them, under the circumstances, so then a child would not be a mamzer from such a union. What would a case like that be, where there would be no tfisas kiddushin with anybody, that there you simply could not have a Jewish relationship where there would be a tfisas kiddushin? That would be a woman who would have relations with a non-Jew. Let's say she was even a married woman. She's a married woman. She has relations with a non-Jew. That non-Jew, he can't get married to this woman. He can't get married to any other woman. See, a man who has relations with his mother, he could get married to a different Jewish woman. This person can't get married to any Jewish woman. So we say that even if you had an Eishes Ish, you had a married woman who would have a relationship, an adulterous relationship with a non-Jewish man, it's a very interesting exception to the rule of mamzerus. The child would not be a mamzer. A very, very interesting thing. The child would not be a mamzer. So those are the general parameters of what brings about mamzerus. And then we have the other exclusion, which is that the Chazal learned from the absoluteness of the way that the prohibition is phrased, Yavo Mamzer B'Kal Hashem, that a mamzer is not allowed to enter into the community of Hashem to marry freely into the Jewish community. However, a suffik mamzer, somebody where there's a question as to whether they're really a mamzer or not, We don't know. There's a question. Maybe the woman had an adulterous relationship. Maybe she didn't. There's a subject. We have a child that's born. We don't know whether the relationship that gave birth to this child was a permitted relationship or whether it was an Issacharis relationship. The child is a suffix. We say that according to Torah law, that child would be allowed to marry within the community of Israel. Furthermore, even if you have an actual, full-fledged, certain mamzer, it's only Bekal Hashem that the mamzer is not allowed to marry. Bekal Vadei B'lo Yavo. But if it's not Bekal Hashem, let's say that the mamzer wanted to marry somebody who wasn't born Jewish. The mamzer wanted to marry a woman who converted to Judaism. So then that would be permissible. Now, the Chazal, for various reasons described in the Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Ayin Gimel, they made a gezeira. Because the Maila Asu B'yuchsin, that if we have an uncertainty regarding a person's lineage, that maybe their mom's there, we don't know who the father was, we're worried maybe they're going to marry a half-sister, half-brother. You have somebody where the mother refuses to say who the father was. But the shtuki says, the shtuki means shtok, be quiet, you know, shut your mouth. Meaning that whenever the child says, who's my daddy? You know, so the mother says, you know, I don't ask me that question. I'm not going to tell you, you know, who your daddy is. So you have that sort of situation. Maybe the child's a mamzer. So we say, even though according to Torah law, the child is allowed to get married within the Jewish community, according to rabbinic law, we don't allow a shtuki to get married. It's what we call a suffix mamzer. So that leniency, that dispensation of a suffix mamzer being mutter min Torah seems to be limited by Chazal, because Chazal say rabbinically, we're not going to allow it. Suffix mamzer is the worst of all worlds, because a mamzer could at least marry somebody who's not a kosher member of the Jewish community. He could marry a mamzeres. However, a suffix mamzer can't even marry a mamzeres, because maybe the suffix mamzer is not really a mamzer, and the suffix mamzer can't marry a regular Jewish woman either. So therefore, it seems on some level to be a little bit worse. So those are the parameters. We have the situations of mamzeres primarily brought about through an adulterous relationship, something of that sort. Could also be a prohibited relationship. A man has relations with his sister. A man has relations with his wife's sister. These types of relationships also would lead to mamzeres. And you have a suffix to mamzer situation that sometimes arises when you just don't know. There's a possibility that the child is a mamzer. We're just not sure. Marsha.
Is a child of a mamzer and a gioris, is that a mamzer or would it be going to kalasha?
It's an excellent question. So technically speaking, a mamzer can marry a gioris, right? That's if you look in source Ches, Shulchan Aruch, Eben Ezra, Siman Dalet, Sifko Beis, Ger, but mamzer mutar b'gioris and b'shucharis. So mamzer can marry a woman who's a gioris or a shifka. A woman who was a maidservant, a female slave from another nation who was then freed to become a full-fledged Jew, Mishim the Kahal Geirim Loikri Kahal, because the Kahal, the community of Geirim, is not considered to be a community of Israel. They weren't born into the community of Israel. However, here's the punchline, Marshall. They have a lot of mamzer. Probably they could get married, but the blood's going to be a mamzer. Comes along the Beis Shmuel and says, thanks a lot. You know, that doesn't help us too much. So the Beis Shmuel says, Venira Lee, and this is a big chiddush from the Beis Shmuel. It's based on a Tosos in Gittin Daf Mem Aleph that speaks about a Chatzi Eved, Chatzi Ben Chorin, somebody who had been a slave and who was owned by two masters. Only one master freed him and not the other master. He was an Eved Knaini, and now he's half free and half slave. So we say that the master who didn't free him is obligated to free him fully as well. Why is he obligated to free him fully as well? Because he's not going to be allowed to marry anybody. At least a shivka eino yachol. He can't marry a shivka a kenainis because he's already, you know, half freed, and he can't marry a full-fledged Jewish woman because he's a half slave. So therefore, he's kind of stuck in betwixt and between. So we say that the other master is obligated to free him. So the question, the Tosfos asks, let him marry a mamzer. Well, whichever one he is, he be, let him marry a mamzeres. He'd be able to marry a mamzeres. So the answer is that we don't allow for a situation where we're going to be marbe mamzerim b'Yisrael, where we're going to increase or plentify the supply of mamzerim in the Jewish nation. We don't want mamzerim. So the Beis Shmuel says here as well, we don't want mamzerim. We don't allow this to happen because we're afraid when you have a gear marrying a mamzeres, technically speaking, is permitted, but the children are going to be mamzerim, so we're not allowed to do that. Now, others say that's not necessarily the case. It could be chatsi eved v'chatsi ben koren, so you free this person completely because of the fact that they don't have to be stuck in a situation where they can only marry a mamzeret and give birth to a mamzerim. However, because if either the father or the mother is a mamzer, the children are going to be mamzerim. You go after the psul, the gemara derives. However, if you have no other solution, the only way this mamzer is going to have children is if the children are going to be mamzerim. So then maybe we would say that it's okay if he has mamzerim. So the Shevet Halevi talks about this and says that it's not muchlach, this opinion of the Beis Shmuel. The Shuvah's Van Hogus, and Moshe Sternbach says, I'll give you a perfect solution, which is let the mamzer marry a giyaris. He can marry, a giyaris, but it should be a giyaris who isn't a bas banim. It should be a giyaris who is she'ain a bas banim. Says the Shuvah's Van Hogus, krach olive simen tovshin samach dalet, who's already past childbearing years, so she's not capable of having children. So it's a permitted relationship, but the children won't be mamzerim. So you already have these glimmers of creativity. Now, the truth is, there are two ways in which you can find solutions for the mamzer. One way is to figure out a way that the person's not really a mamzer, or the woman's not really a mamzer. The other is to figure out who they really can marry. As we said, okay, a mamzer can marry a mamzeret, but then we're going to have a problem because the children are going to be mamzerim. A mamzer can marry a giyaris, but the children are going to be mamzerim. So Rabbi Tarfon had a wonderful idea. So the Mishnah in the Kiddushin, Daf Samach Tes, Rabbi Tarfon says that I have a great idea where I'm able to be matayer. You're called the mamzerim litayer. That the mamzerim can become taller. Why is that? We're going to allow a mamzer to marry a full-fledged shifcha, a woman who is non-Jewish. She wasn't converted to be a giyaris. If she's a full-fledged Jew, so then the child's going to be Jewish and the child's going to be a mamzer because it's going to go after the father. But if she's only a shifcha, so then her child is not considered to be Jewish yet. The child's an eved. He's not considered to be Jewish until the child will be emancipated. Once you have a non-Jew who's emancipated to be Jewish, they don't have any taint of illegitimacy, then they'll be perfectly legitimate. A regular Jew can't marry a shivka. Why can't a regular Jew marry a shivka? So Rambam says it's an issa d'rabbanan, so we suspend the issa d'rabbanan in the case of a mamzer in order to enable the mamzer to have children, then we'll convert the children. Mamzer can't marry a full-fledged non-Jew, but lo sishtatin bam. That's an absolute issa d'raisa that we're not going to suspend. However, we'll allow a mamzer to marry a shivka. The Rabbeinu Tam says that it's an issa d'oraisa. However, it's an issa d'oraisa based on the pasuk lo yakadesh. A person is not allowed to defile their kedusha. They're not allowed to defile their sanctity. A mamzer starts off already without any sanctity. So no problem. This issa d'oraisa doesn't apply to a mamzer. Mamzer can marry a shifcha. So some of the Mishonim, Achronim, they discuss nowadays what? Nowadays, can we allow a mamzer to marry a shifcha? To say, we'll convert a woman who wants to, she'll go to the CRC, says, I want to convert to Judaism. We'll say, good, okay, but, just one condition. We have this mamzer here, we need you to marry. So maybe she's in love with the mamzer anyway, so it all works out. We're not going to force anyone to marry someone they don't want to marry, or maybe they like each other anyway. You say, the thing is, though, that instead of converting to be a full-fledged Jewess, you'll convert to only halfway. You'll be a shifcha. A shifcha, you have, you're not going to be considered a full-fledged Jew. You're considered to be a servant. you go to the mikvah, you get immersed for the purpose of being in servitude, you have certain mitzvahs that you're obligated to perform, mitzvahs, but you're not going to be a full-fledged Jew, and this way you'll have children, then the children will be converted afterwards. So the Maharival said, this doesn't work. And nowadays, he was speaking of the 16th century, he said it didn't work because they outlawed slavery. This is, they didn't know about America. He said they outlawed slavery, and therefore, as a matter of Dina de Malchuso, you can't acquire somebody to be a slave. It doesn't work anymore. And then there were others who said, who cares if the nations of the world outlawed slavery? The Maharsham, others said, nonetheless, we have our own set of rules. We can do this. And it was a big dispute. So it came up again nowadays. Recently, the Minchas Yitzchak had a correspondence with his brother-in-law, his Dayan Weiss, Minchas Yitzchak, who is the head Dayan of the Eidah Charedis in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, and he had a brother-in-law, Chelkos Yaakov, Yaakov Breish in Switzerland. And they had a correspondence back and forth about this issue. Yaakov Breish wanted to say that you could convert somebody to be a shifla so she can marry the mamzer, and you just won't enslave her. What's the big deal? You won't enslave her. You ask her to make a chulit or something, but you know, you're not going to have her, you know, do things that are menial to, you know, be an absolute slave. But it's okay. You'll just, you know, go through it. The Minchas Yitzchak didn't like that because he said that if, as a matter of Dina de Mahusa, it doesn't work because slavery has been outlawed, it doesn't matter if you don't enslave her. The Maisa, she's not a slave. You don't have the right to convert somebody for purposes of being a slave. It's against the law. And if you say you're going to just do it as a pro forma thing, but you're not going to actually put the person into servitude, that's a harama. You're not allowed to do a harama on an issa d'araisa to produce a monkey business, to find some sort of a halakha loophole, so the whole thing is just basically a farce. You're not allowed to make a farce out of the Torah. And furthermore, he said that the law is that if somebody converts to be an eved or to be a shifcha, they don't have to do a full-fledged Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs because the master is in charge. They're forcing them to come into their employ, and there doesn't have to be a full acceptance of Mitzvahs. They said this is a good way for people to come into Judaism through the back door to become slaves so that they don't have to do a full Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs, and they'll enter into the community this way. And we don't want people who aren't going to accept Mitzvahs fully. So the Minchas Yitzchak completely shot this down and said that you're not allowed to do this. Now others said that maybe you can come up with various solutions. There's a Dayan, a Choshev Dayan in Milwaukee that we know very well, Rabbi Mendel Sidrovic, who has a case dealing with a mamzer. It was clear that the woman was married at a kosher wedding, and then she didn't get a get from her first husband. She married a second husband, had a child. Said, I'm dealing with a real life mamzer over here, and I need to enable him to get married. So he also wants to be able to find that he can marry a shifcha. And he said, maybe since every single shifcha has two different elements, that when the Torah speaks about the kinyan, acquisition that's made of a shifcha, there's a kinyan mamun, there's a kinyan that you have the right to enslave the person, that you have a monetary acquisition, you can put the person to work. And then there's a kinyan isser. Kinyan isser means that they have certain obligations as sort of a quasi-Jew, that they're not considered a full Jew, that your child wouldn't be considered Jewish, but they have a certain obligation to mitzvahs. That is what we call a kinyan isser. So just have the person convert for purposes of the kinyan isser and not for the kinyan mamon. You'll be mafkir, the kinyan mamon. You'll say you'll be a full-fledged shifcha, but the person's mafkir, that they say that they're giving up the ownership of the Eved insofar as the Kenyan Mamun to begin with. When they first are going to be converting them, it won't work because it's a violation of Dina de Malchus. He says, no, you'll do the Hefker, you'll do the relinquishing of the Kenyan Mamun ownership even before you perform the conversion. And then he has this whole big discussion, can you do that? There are certain Shittos that say that you could do, like the Bach, who says you can do hefker on a davar shelo bal yom. You can relinquish ownership on something which hasn't yet come to your possession. So it argues, but maybe in this case where there's a smichas das that everybody clearly wants to do it, maybe everybody would agree that it would work in this particular case. So he came up with this great suggestion. He sent it around to myself, to Dayanim all over the world. They asked what we thought of it. I said, great, you gave me material for a shiur. That's what I thought of it. this is a subject of a very passionate discussion. Ezra Batsri, in his sefer regarding laws of personal status, says he has a better solution. Have the people perform the conversion of this woman in like the Sudan. You know, some place, when he wrote it, he said he thinks that, you know, there are certain places where they haven't outlawed slavery yet. So you could do it over there. And then, you know, after it's done, you'll bring them back to the rest of civilization. Others say that nowadays there really is no place anymore where they haven't outlawed slavery. So thank God. That's a good thing. We're happy about that. But it makes it more difficult. And others say, what are you talking about? Why are you running to the Sudan and all these other places? Or distinguishing between King and Mammon and King and Issa, just do it in Eretz Yisrael. Well, we can't follow a law in Eretz Yisrael. Well, we're bound by the United Nations in Eretz Yisrael. Well, maybe they kind of like helped us get off to a start. So this is widely discussed. But then there's another possibility. You look in source above, this is the Taz. The Taz talks about how a woman shouldn't sleep if she's an Isha. A woman should not sleep on the bed sheets of another man, because if she does so, then she might pentisabe mishikva zera shel acher. Maybe she'll become pregnant from the shikva zera of somebody else. And as a result, what are we worried about? We're worried, if you look at the end of the Taz, Gzeira Shem Yisam Achoso, that we're worried that Me'aviv, that maybe you'll have a son, and he won't realize that he's not from his real father, that the Shikva Zera that was on that sheet, this is like a very early version of artificial insemination, came from another man, and she'll end up marrying her, and he'll end up marrying his half-sister, this boy who comes, who now is the product of the Shikva Zera that was on the sheet that his mother lied on, that came from another man. Then maybe he's going to marry the sister of that other man without realizing that that other man is his father. So therefore, a woman shouldn't lie down on another man's sheets. The various portion point out, based on this Rabbeinu Peretz that's quoted by the Taz over here in Yoredeya Simin Kuf Tzadiyeh, it doesn't look like they're concerned that the child's going to be a mamzer, even though the child's coming from a woman who is giving birth to a child that came from the Shikva Zera of another man that happened to be on the sheet that she lied on and went inside of her body. Just says we're worried that this, if she gives birth to a son, maybe he'll marry his half-sister. Doesn't say, and this son is going to end up being a mamzer. In fact, the Ben Sira, we're told, was also born in a similar fashion from Yirmiyahu's daughter, who slept on the bedsheet of her father or went into the bathtub that her father had been in with some Shikva Zera that somehow was there, and she gave birth to Ben Sira. The gematria of Ben Sira is the same as Yirmiyahu. We see that we see the connection between Ben Sira and Yirmiyahu, and nobody ever said that Ben Sira, you know, who was considered like a Confucius type personality, quoted in the Gemara with all kinds of wise aphorisms or whatever. No, we don't find that Ben Sira is ever viewed as a mamzer by anybody. So we see that it could be that if there is a relationship between two people that normally would have led to mamzerus, if that relationship is not in the context of a prohibited intimate type of union, maybe that would be another way in which a child wouldn't be a mamzer. In fact, that's how Rav Moshe Feinstein paskins. You see here in Sor Zion, Chela Gimel, Simon Yud Aleph. Moshe has this elsewhere as well. Rav Moshe says that if you have a child that comes from, let's say, a married woman and another man, but who's not her husband, but it was through artificial insemination, the child will not be a mamzer. So some wanted to suggest, or Sendrovic wanted to suggest this with a suffix mamzer, we have a suffix, whether this chiddush of Rav Moshe is correct. Some disagree with this Kiddush of Moshe. Since Eliezer wasn't so crazy about it. This wasn't so crazy. You're not supposed to give your Zera to Eishes Amisacha. They say that it doesn't say anything about having a prohibited sexual relationship. It's even that if you just give from your Zera to a married woman, that itself can create an adulterous relationship. So that's a question. So he says it's a question, but certainly Rav Moshe Feinstein is of the opinion that a child from artificial insemination is never going to be a mamzer. But Moshe goes so far as to say that if a mamzer himself would have a relationship with a woman and that woman would give birth to a child, even though the father himself is a mamzer, the child would not be considered to be a mamzer if it is in the context of artificial insemination. So that's quite a chiddush. That's quite an amazing statement. So Saint Ravik suggests maybe we should allow a suffix mamzer to marry a giyaris. Let's go back to the Beis Shmuel's case. Either Beis Shmuel is worried that the children are going to be mamzerim. Let them have all their children through artificial insemination. So that's there was somebody who wrote an article for the Tachumin Journal by the name of Baruch Finkelstein, in which he suggests that maybe you don't have to confine this to a suffix mamzer. Even if you had a vaday mamzer, maybe we should rely upon Rav Moshe's leniency and say that we don't have to find a shifka for the vaday mamzer to marry. Let's use this device. A vaday mamzer will marry a giyaris, assuming the giyaris wants to marry him and they like each other. And then they'll have children through test tubes. They'll have children through IVF. They'll have children through artificial insemination. And there won't be any problem of mamzeris if you assume like Rav Moshe. He goes even further, and I don't think that anybody else has quite accepted this chiddush, but he goes even further to say that he thinks that this could work even for a mamzeris. This I find a little bit hard to swallow, because the mamzeris is actually giving birth to the child. So it'd be kind of be hard for her not to convey, you know, her mamzeris, but he says you can argue that if there is no forbidden relationship, so even a mamzeris would not convey her status to the child. We find that there are cases that the Gemara talks about where a woman who's a maidservant is freed, but on condition that her child will still be an eved. So we see, he says that there could be a division between the status of the mother and the status of the child that's born to the mother. Okay, that requires further research, but these are some of the creative solutions that to take advantage of modern day technologies, shall we say. That's one of the arguments in favor of not worrying about DNA identification that is sometimes used, as we know, to help to identify missing husbands in Aguna situations, like in the World Trade Center Aguna cases. They were able to identify bodies based on DNA identifications. People started to worry, maybe if you rely so much on DNA, then we're going to create mamzerim, because people are going to do 23andMe tests. We have this problem now, mamish all the time, coming up, because people are very curious about their lineage. They're going around doing these 23andMe tests, and they're discovering that the parents are, their father's not really their father, and this other fellow, you know, next door is really the father or whatever, and discovering all kinds of, you know, scary things that could create mamzeris shailos. So some say, maybe you don't have to worry so much about it, because even if it turns out that the real DNA father was the fellow next door, maybe it was through artificial insemination. You know, they just did it very quietly, this whole artificial insemination thing, and it doesn't necessarily create mamzeris. So these are, you know, some of the interesting ways in which one can, you know, take a mamzer and create a next generation that isn't necessarily going to be mamzer. Yes.
Is the artificial insemination ever been used in mamzers?
I don't know to what degree this has been employed. These are recent shuvos that are making these suggestions. I don't know to what degree they're employed. I'll tell you what's more employed is trying to find solutions that a person's not a mamzer altogether. What would that be? So Rav Moshe has in a number of places where he says that there's a question as to whether a woman had a kosher wedding before she got divorced, and now she's remarried and she has a child. But we have a Shiloh. Was it a good wedding? Was it not a good wedding? So if you look in the Gemara itself, the Gemara only has the case of a suffik mamzer, in this case of like a shtuki, of a child that the mother shuts up the child and says, don't ask who your father was, and so forth. Or in a sufi, you have a fondling that's just lying on the doorstep, and we don't know exactly, you know, who are the parents of this child. And especially if the child was like left out to die, wasn't properly taken care of, so you have an asufi problem. But the Gemara doesn't really mention other cases of suffik mamzer. The Rambam introduces this notion that if you have a woman that we're not sure if her get was a good get, we're not sure if her original kiddushin was a good kiddushin, and now she goes out and she's with somebody else, so that child is a suffik mamzer, so the child and can't get married. Rav Moshe says that a suffik mamzer is a very specific sort of thing when I have a 50-50 doubt. But if I have a situation where I have strong arguments that can build up to saying that this person, they're a suffix, but the suffix is less than 50%. So then he says that you can rely upon the robe to say that the child is going to be permissible. This is the Igros Moshe in Tesvav, I think is where you find this. Where the Igros Moshe says, you don't have to not be machmir when the robe is that the person is probably okay. He talks about this in the context of where it seems very likely that the people got married, that the Masada Kiddushin didn't use kosher edim, that it's more likely than not. Like, for example, with the non-Orthodox weddings and things of that sort, you do your research. The research is inconclusive, but there's a chazaka in certain communities that you didn't have edim witnesses who were Shomer Shabbos. So he relies upon this bar in a number of places where if you can knock it down, was suffik mamzer situation, there's room to be maker. The Gemara in Ksuvos, from Daf Yud Gimel to Daf Tezvav, talks about a suffik mamzer a situation, or where you have a woman who had relations and we're not entirely sure whether she becomes psuul kahuna or not. Maybe she had relations with a non-Jew who would possibly have kahuna, and talks about requiring trei rubi, that you need like two robes, the two majorities of people in whatever place she had relations who would not invalidate her. And then there's a question, do I require two robes whenever there's a question about the child? We don't know who the father was. Do I need two different majority populations? One, the majority of residents who lived in a community, and the other, the majority of residents who passed through the community, rova yiv, rova siya. Do I require that with respect to making the blood legitimate or not? And it's a whole big discussion. And some say that in many of our situations, you have that. A woman was married and now she didn't get a get from her first husband. She has a child from somebody else. We don't know who that somebody else is. If she's living in a community where most of the people are non-Jewish, so you can say that, oh, okay, then the child won't be a mamzer. And if most of the people who pass through the city are Jewish, what if she actually remarried another man? I know she remarried another man. And this man is clearly Jewish. And the assumption is that the child comes from another man. So from the second husband who is Jewish. So then you have a more difficult situation on your hands. You look at the Dafi Moshe in Source Tezayim. He talks about a woman who got divorced. And she was not with her husband for a long time before the divorce. And she got pregnant, clearly with the paramour that she was with and living with at the time. But we don't know whether she, but then she has a child and she gets a get. And she has a child 6 months after the get. So we don't know whether this child was just a premature baby. That was conceived after she received the get, or whether the child was conceived with her paramour when she was still married to her first husband. But then he says that we have another suffix. That's one suffix. But now I have another subject. Maybe the child didn't come from the paramour altogether. She was with this fellow. If she was having an affair with this man, so she stands to reason that she was having an affair with other men as well. Shema Bala Goy. So maybe she had relations, not with this man that she eventually ended up being with, but maybe she ended up, or maybe she had this child with a non-Jew, even if it was before she got the get from her husband. So we see if you have a fake type of situation, you could be making as well. So therefore, people, certain posting like Rav Avadya Yosef, would take into account in all of these situations, say, oh, look, the woman got divorced from her first husband without a get. She's living with another man. She's not really married halakhically to that man. He was Jewish. The marriage doesn't count. So that's considered to be an illicit relationship. She had the illicit relationship with this man. Who's to say she didn't have an illicit relationship with another man? And if she gave birth or became pregnant in a place where most of the people are Jewish, so maybe you can follow that to say that there's a role that the child came from the non-Jewish population. Because the idea of requiring trei ubis, the Maharit and others say that if I'm dealing with a b'dieved situation where the child's otherwise going to be declared a mamzer, so maybe I only, require one role. So you have a lot of shubos about this. What about the fact that normally a father is believed there's a din of yakir? Yakir means that, not my son yakir, but yakir yud chof yud resh, not yud kof yud resh, that yakir, right? That the father has the ability to identify his child. Why don't we say the second man then has this ability of yakir, that he can identify that this is really a son? So first of all, maybe don't, or this is son or his daughter, maybe it's best not to ask the second father to identify whether he really considers himself to be the father of the child. And maybe the din of yakir, some say that it only applies in a situation where you have to identify somebody as a bechor. So if you're not, because it's in the context of identifying somebody as a bechor. So there are ways out of that as well. And what about the fact that bilos hokin acharabal, that if a woman's actually living with a man, then we generally assume that the child comes from the man that she's living with. So Rav Avadya Yosef is fond of quoting the Panim Yopos, a Perush al Torah, written by the Baal Hafla, who says, Ro bilos hokin acharabal only works with respect to a husband that she's halakhically married to. If the second fellow is not really her husband because she never got a get from the first husband, then the whole the principle of the Ro bilos hokin acharabal does not apply to a man to whom she would be prohibited by Issacharis. So the main thing that poskim try to do when they have these types of mamzeres situations or suffix mamzeres situations is to try to find an out, to say that usually it has to do with an adulterous type of situation. So you try to find either that the woman maybe really received the get, or that her marriage in the first place wasn't a kosher marriage. That's what Rav Moshe Feinstein was famous for doing that. He would find these situations. The woman was married in a non-Orthodox marriage, and he would conclude that you didn't have two kosher eidim. You didn't have two kosher eidim, therefore she wasn't married in the first place. And even if it's a suffix, if it's a probability that the marriage wasn't a valid marriage, all kinds of arguments as to why it wasn't valid, that this person was valid, it was possible, this person was possible, the rabbi was a kopeh, he was an apikoros, and bring in all kinds of different arguments. So then you can utilize that in order to make a preponderance of the evidence to conclude that the child's not going to be a mamzer. But to say that every single situation is easy to resolve, I think is very much an overstatement, because Lemaise, sometimes you have cases where there clearly was a very good, solid, orthodox marriage that took place. Clearly, there was no get. A woman remarried another man, a Jewish man in a community that's completely Jewish, becomes much more difficult to manufacture these arguments. But you try. You try very, very hard, because this is going back to what we said at the very beginning. B'nei dimasa ashukim, the tears of the oppressed, that it might be a mubasko yuchal l'skon, but you nonetheless, we, as mere mortals, do our best to take advantage of the tools that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us in order to try to find that maybe something, you know, is not mu'vas to begin with, so you don't need to be misakin it. I had a case when I was at the Beis Din of America where I learned the importance of really struggling as mightily as I could to try to resolve these cases. It was a case where a boy was becoming a Baal Tshuva, and the mother realized she never got a get from her first husband, and the child now had a taint of possible mamzerus, but he would want to marry someday within the Orthodox Jewish community. And she came crying to the Beis Din, what is she going to do? She had an Orthodox marriage to the man that she married originally. So she was willing to give her a get now. She said, great, can I cure this retroactively? He said, you can't cure it retroactively if he gives you the get now. There's a Maharsham that seems to indicate that maybe based on a Gemara and Gittin, if you, the husband appoints a shliach and then cancels the shliach in front of only one witness, you might say, Achinu Rabbanan the Kiddushin Minei, whole separate discussion, but Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Eliezer, Yehuda Waldenberg, already explained why that doesn't really work when you're deliberately setting up the mechanism in order to help out the woman to make her previous children legitimate. And that mechanism might not work according to all the Tanaim and the way we paskin and so forth. And so in this particular case, we consulted with Rav David Feinstein, the lots of authorities, who all told us that we shouldn't even try to do like this mechanism of some sort of a weird kind of get that's going to result in eradicating the validity of the first marriage retroactively, because that doesn't really work. So do the get, because it's good for the woman not to be in an adulterous relationship anymore, and we'll figure out how to help the child, or how to help the child, because the first marriage was Orthodox, but I did my research. It turned out even though the rabbi was Orthodox, he may have been the only kosher aid at the wedding, because it was in a small community where nobody really was Shomer Shabbos. There was one person, the chazan, who may have been Shomer Shabbos, but then afterwards he went off the derech. And you can argue, Hokiach Sofo al Tfilaso, is such an argument I found in the Achronim from the Maharsham. You got to use whatever you can when you're dealing with something on Zeres. A plush that between her first husband and the second husband, she had a relationship with a non-Jew. So it was easier for me to argue because Shem Shazin same Zek, Haksin same Acher, she really did have a relationship with a non-Jew. It's a Beis Shmuel that says we don't use that argument unless the woman says I was with a non-Jew. Here in this case, the woman actually said she had been with a non-Jew. So who says that the real father of the second of this child was the second husband? Maybe she was still with a non-Jew. Plus, maybe you can make the argument, Ro Bilos Hokin Acharabal still applies to her first husband. They still live in the same neighborhood. They saw each other from time to time. They actually were even intimate at one point in time after the divorce. So there was a lot of different arguments, but I wasn't comfortable relying upon my arguments alone. And I was getting frustrated. So I went to sleep one night, just in my frustration, in the middle of my dream, who should appear to me but Rabbi Avadia Yosef himself, believe it or not. So the Asma comes to me in the dream, and he says, I think it was in Hebrew, he said, don't worry, don't agonize so much. Just write up all of your time of nimukim, write up all of your reasoning, send it to me, and I'll take care of it. So I woke up, I thought, that's a good idea. So I sat down, I wrote up all my reasoning, we got the shayla over to Rabbi Avadia Yosef, he sent it to his son-in-law, Rabbi Ezra Bar Sholem, who wrote up a tshuva based on the arguments that I made, approving of the various arguments, throwing in some additional arguments. There were some additional, you know, features and points as well, and sent it over to Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef looked it over. He said, oh, Taka, this is good. I like it. I completely agree. This was a wonderful tshuva. And Yafidanta, and this child is mutter to enter into the covenant of the Jewish people. You have to. Do your hishtadlus. I always say that I'll end with this, and this is really the quote of Rabbi Sachs, who had such, you know, sensitivity for every single human being, certainly every single member of the Jewish nation, that there are only two different types of mamzerus cases. There are those that we're able to solve, and there are those that we haven't been able to solve yet.
We generally believe the woman that she tells the father of the child. We don't always know. The woman has no believability. She might.